Welcome to the Irish Tech News Podcast, where we will bring you some of the most interesting interviews and features from the world of tech. Visit irishtechnews.ie and check out our podcast section to explore all of our previous episodes. You can subscribe to our podcast using whatever your favorite app or service is by visiting anchor.fm/irish-tech-news.
Hello and welcome to the Irish Tech News Podcast. My name is Melanie Boylan and today I'm here with Jordan Evans, who's the Deputy Project Manager of the Europa Clipper mission. Welcome to the podcast, Jordan.
Thank you very much, Melanie. Great to be here.
So tell us, whereabouts are you based at the moment, Jordan?
Well, I'm technically at home, as most of us are, but I'm based at NASA's Jet Propulsion Laboratory in Pasadena, California, sometimes referred to as JPL.
And Europa Clipper is quite the mission, isn't it? So let's get started. What is the Europa Clipper mission hoping to accomplish?
Yes. Europa Clipper is going to conduct a detailed reconnaissance of Jupiter's moon, Europa. Investigate whether it's an icy moon, investigate whether that moon could harbor the conditions that are suitable for life. So we're basically looking at habitability. We're looking at it across the ice shell and the ocean that we believe exists beneath it. That ocean, we think, has about twice the liquid water of all the oceans on Earth, and yet it's only the size of our moon. We want to characterize that ice shell. We want to characterize the water and the surface ice-ocean exchange, how material might be moving back and forth. We want to understand the habitability of that ocean through what it's made out of, the composition and chemistry. And we also want to understand the formation of these interesting surface features that we've seen with past missions like the Galileo mission in the 80s, to understand sites there where there might be current or recent activity and really characterize high science interest locations on the surface. And we're going to do that by sending the Europa Clipper, this highly capable radiation tolerant spacecraft that's going to do long looping orbits around Jupiter and do repeated flybys very close to the surface of this interesting icy moon.
So was that the last mission in the 80s towards Europa?
Galileo focused on the Jupiter system as a whole, including the Galilean satellites, including the moons of Jupiter. And so it had a bunch of observations of Europa. We have another spacecraft at Jupiter right now called Juno. Similarly, it's orbiting Jupiter, and it is focused actually on Jupiter and its internal structure, its magnetic field, et cetera. But I know in the extended mission, it will also start looking at some of the moons as well. But we have this mission is dedicated to the science of Europa.
I can imagine just how exciting it's going to be going back with much more advanced tools and sensors, especially now that we're able to enjoy the video of Mars that's on Perseverance at the moment. So I can imagine how exciting it's going to be to actually have, you know, almost real-time images and video of, you know, Europa. That must be incredible. But why Europa? Explain to us why Europa.
So Europa is an interesting planetary body. I mean, it was discovered by Galileo Galilei back in 1610, and that discovery transformed the way we look at the cosmos. He found Europa as well as three other large moons around Jupiter. And that discovery showed conclusively that Earth wasn't the center of all motion that's happening in the universe. And that profoundly changed humanity's view of our place in the cosmos. And so with this moon, I mentioned is about the size of our moon. It's a world that shows strong evidence for an ocean of liquid water beneath that icy crust. That water could harbor conditions favorable for life. So it's widely regarded as the most likely place in the solar system beyond Earth for life to have emerged and perhaps still exists. And that, of course, would be a hugely profound change in humanity's view of our place in the cosmos.
I can imagine. So where are you in the development of the mission at this time?
So at this point, we've completed our detailed designs and we're building a lot of flight hardware and developing a lot of software to control all that hardware to be launched in 2024 for that mission. So early next year, we start what we call the assembly, test, and launch operations phase, which is exactly what it sounds like. All of the hardware comes together in a sterile clean room, and we begin to put all those pieces, integrate the instruments to the rest of the spacecraft, test that it all works as we envision, shake it like the rocket will shake it, put it in a thermal vacuum chamber and simulate the cold of space and ensure that this machine that we've been working on for several years now will do the science mission that we intended it to do. So it's a really exciting time for us in the development of the mission. We're on track for that, to have the spacecraft ready for that 2024 launch.
So there's a robot, isn't there? So why is it so challenging to design a robot to explore Europa?
There's a variety of reasons. So you mentioned near real-time images and things like that. So Jupiter is far away from the sun. It's 5.5 times farther away from the sun than Earth is. We call that 5.5 astronomical units on average. And Jupiter has this intense radiation environment, and Europa sits right in that that environment. And so one of our main challenges is to try to develop and deliver the spacecraft that's hardy enough to withstand that pummeling of radiation from Jupiter, but sensitive enough to gather all the science that I mentioned, to explore and understand Europa and its interior, the oceans. And so, with that, we've basically had to protect all of the electronics that are susceptible to radiation inside what we call a thick-walled vault. So we surround the electronics with titanium and aluminum that act as a radiation shield against those high-energy atomic particles, which really slows down all the aging effects that radiation will do to our electronics and sensors, cameras, and things like that. Additionally, you know, we've got a spacecraft that starts at Earth, with the kind of solar environment that we have here, but ultimately has to operate 5.5 times farther away. And so it's got to stay cool enough near Earth and on Earth during test, and then stay warm enough while operating at Europa. And so we have some rather elaborate thermal control systems that circulate fluids around to move temperature, heat between boxes that don't want, you know, need to get rid of the heat, to boxes that are hanging out there in the cold that need to be warmed up. We've done similar types of architectural designs on our rovers that are on Mars, where we keep the interior of the rover very warm using waste heat coming off of the nuclear power supply in the case of the rovers. We also have the fact that, you know, with Jupiter being so far away, the one-way light time between Earth and Jupiter, depending upon where the two planets are around the sun and relative to each other, is 35 to about 52 minutes of one-way light time. Radio waves going at the speed of light, it takes that long. So we can't just joystick the spacecraft to do what we want it to do. The spacecraft has to be fully autonomous, including dealing with anomalies and, you know, safing itself if it encounters a problem.
Wow. So it's almost like it's wearing a spacesuit by the sounds of it.
With the vault, yes. Yeah, I mean, it's the same way you have to protect humans from the environment of space. Similarly, we have to protect the sensitive electronics and sensors.
Clever. Okay, so can you give us a real idea of how big Europa Clipper is, please?
Sure, yeah. So dimensionally, it's about 6 meters in height. And the solar arrays, so it's a solar mission way out at Jupiter. So it's going to use that faint little bit of energy from the sun to generate electrical power to power all of the computers and instruments. And so you need very large solar arrays. So those solar arrays stretch 22 meters from tip to tip.
Wow.
So I think about it as being about as long as a tennis court and about as tall as a two-story house.
Oh, wow, that is big.
Advanced electronics and sensors. And it has to fly itself around Jupiter, dive bomb across the skies of Europa, performing these extremely sensitive scientific measurements. And at liftoff, including all of the fuel that it'll need for its journey, it has a mass of about 6,000 kilograms.
Sounds like almost like the James Webb telescope, because that folds up and it's huge as well.
It's huge. With its sunshade, yes. The James Webb Space Telescope is quite large. Yeah, so this is another one of those great, you know, grand scale vehicles, I'll say.
Wow. Well, I'd like to see an image of those two next to one of those, actually. So what would you like to share about the science instruments that Clipper will be carrying to Europa?
Sure, yes. We've got 9 science instruments that were selected by NASA for this mission to perform those, you know, that habitability investigation that I mentioned earlier. Mm. The payload includes cameras, spectrometers that, that'll produce high resolution images of Europa's surface to help us understand the composition as well, by looking across various wavelengths. an ice penetrating radar. These radar antennas are mounted along these giant solar arrays, and it'll be used to determine the thickness of that icy shell, search for subsurface lakes and pockets that might exist, similar to those that we see beneath Antarctica's ice sheet. The mission is going to carry a magnetometer that'll measure the field strength and direction of the moon's magnetic field, and allow scientists to help determine the depth and also the salinity, how salty that ocean is. You can do all that by how that magnetic field changes as Europa moves through Jupiter's magnetic field, essentially. We're going to do gravity measurements that'll help confirm that existence of that subsurface ocean. Mm-hmm. I've got a thermal imaging instrument that surveys that frozen surface with extremely sensitive sensors that will search for recent eruptions of warmer water coming up from below the ice, either at or near the surface, while additional instruments are looking for evidence of water or tiny particles in this tenuous atmosphere or exosphere around Europa.
Well, this seems a bit of a ridiculous question to ask now, because I'm sure you're going to say all of it, but what are you most excited about?
Oh, wow. Yeah. So I'll take it up to the 100,000 foot level, let's say. I'm most excited just about Clipper representing another opportunity for humanity to explore at the highest level. It's a trait of humans to be curious. It's a trait of humans to want to branch out and to explore. At JPL, our motto is Dare Mighty Things. It's been the motto of JPL, and it originally comes from a quote by Theodore Roosevelt, where it is far better to dare mighty things and to win glorious triumphs, even though you're going to be checkered by failure, than to live in what he called the dim gray twilight that's in between, where you know neither success nor defeat. So this is hard. What we're doing is hard, but we're doing it to try to elevate technology, elevate our understanding, elevate the science globally, and inspire the next generation of scientists, engineers, and explorers. And so we're on the cusp with this mission of exploring, you know, what may be the best place in our solar system beyond Earth for life to exist. And so, you know, ultimately, what am I most excited about? It could answer that fundamental question of, are we alone? And that's huge to me personally.
It will be, especially if we find out we aren't. So you did hint already, and I'm not sure if everybody heard, but you did hint when the anticipated launch was. But just for those who didn't hear, when do you anticipate the launch of Europa Clipper is?
We'll have the spacecraft ready for launch in 2024. So,
right. And as there is quite a bit more lead time, I was just wondering, is there any possible thoughts about adding more instruments or sensors?
I mean, the question does come up periodically, but I mean, I described some of the challenges associated with getting hardware to survive the environment around Jupiter and at Europa, the complexity of that. And that requires a lot of time to design and highly specialized parts. And so even though, you know, we're still now about 3 years, 3.5 years away from launch, we're just coming into the phase where all of the hardware is being built and will start to come together in as a system. So adding on hardware is very challenging. It usually takes 5 to 10 years to mature a design for a mission like Europa Clipper.
5 to 10 years?
Yes.
Wow. I didn't realize it took that long. okay. So this has all been in the workings quite some time.
That's correct. Yes.
But you can still take advantage of updated camera wear and sensors and that sort of stuff.
So we try to use the most technologically advanced systems we can where necessary to do the kinds of science. So, yeah, what's interesting is, you know, the technologies that can survive here on Earth might be, you know, higher pixels, better resolution, et cetera. Mm-hmm. But those latest technologies may not survive at Jupiter. And so it ends up being a balance always the ultimate goal being try to get as much science as we can in a mission that we can manageably accomplish and be successful.
I suppose the temptation to, I mean, there's a part of me that's going, I bet the whole team wish they could drop something into the water to see what's in there, but you can't, can you? Because you may jeopardize life.
Yes. So what you're describing is what we refer to as planetary protection. Yes. And there are all kinds of international laws and agreements that govern planetary protection. And so, yes, we have to be very careful in the materials we use, in the way we sterilize the spacecraft, in the way we fly the spacecraft, not to jeopardize this pristine world that exists, that, you know, astrobiologists would say, again, is a place that could harbor life. And so so we have all kinds of protocols in place right down to the end of the mission. When we need to dispose of the spacecraft at the end of the mission, we have to find a way to do it safely so that it can never impact one of the interesting worlds like Europa Clipper. We did that with the Cassini mission at the end, where we burned it up in the cloud tops of Saturn. And so there would be a similar disposal plan for Europa Clipper at the end of
it. It would probably be as heartbreaking as well.
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, I started getting choked up even just talking about Cassini. I was at the lab when, you know, it flew its final flight and sent its final data back to mission control at JPL.
So how long do you think this mission will last? I mean, all of them have outlived what they said they were going to do, but how long do you think this will last?
Yeah, so we plan for a mission that is on the order of 3 to 4 years to accomplish the science that we've designed it to do. Mm-hmm. And obviously, depending upon how well the spacecraft is holding up in that intense radiation environment, what anomalies, as well as what science discoveries Clipper will have made by that point, NASA has a process to look at extending the missions of these machines, as long as we're getting valuable science and we can find ways to operate it for overall less resources. So it's hard to say, because we do have the fact that as soon as we get there, all of the computers will and cameras and everything will start aging from that intense radiation environment. And so once we finish the prime mission, I would hope that Clipper will be as robust as the other machines that we designed, because we designed them to deal with all kinds of unknowns and uncertainties in these environments that we send these robots to in deep space. So I would hope that it'll go beyond its primary mission. But that's a decision for NASA in the future.
Mm. Now, Jordan, this has all been superb, amazing information, but let's learn a little bit about the man behind it, or one of the many people behind it, in fairness, because you're the person we have here today.
Sure, yes, yeah, and I am definitely one of many. I mean, it takes a huge, diverse group of people with different backgrounds, experiences, educations, and talents to come together to make a mission like this. For me personally, I'm sorry, go ahead.
Well, that's exactly what I wanted to actually touch upon, because you and the whole team have had, this isn't your first gig. So you've got a lot of missions that you can work back from. And those experiences, the things that you've learned from previous missions, how much of those have you been able to apply to this anticipated mission?
I think daily, each of us is applying our past experiences, our successes, and probably even more importantly, our failures and what we learned from them, to be able to look for places where Europa Clipper needs to be more robust, or might have a risk that we need to try to understand and mitigate. And so each mission builds, you know, we stand on the shoulders of those that came before us. Even if we worked on those missions, we were in different roles. And so Europa Clipper tries to leverage past missions and our understanding of Jupiter, like Galileo, what we're learning from Juno now, heritage from Cassini, recent experience from our Mars missions as well. We look for ways to operate, you know, more cost effectively. So we even look at some of the smaller, you know, missions that are maybe on a smaller scale than a mission like a Cassini or a Galileo or Europa Clipper, to look for ways to try to operate more efficiently at a lower overall cost. And so, so we build on those. We each carry our scars from the past missions, and that allows each person on the team to look at problems from a different perspective. And it's really exciting when the ideas start flowing, the questions start bouncing around back and forth, and it's all in the name of elevating everyone's understanding of this machine that we're building to do this crazy, interesting science mission.
There's one thing I wanted to ask, actually. As we know, Europa is a moon of Jupiter. So as it's going round, it's going to be on the wrong side to be able to communicate with us. Is there any way that you can bounce that information from somewhere, like we can with the MRO in Mars or near Mars? So is there anything like that in Jupiter?
That's a great question. Yeah. So as you describe on Mars, particularly for the rovers that we have on the surface, where they don't have very large antennas and they're sitting on the surface, so there may be periods of time where they're not directly facing Earth to be able to communicate. And so we use relay radios to satellites in orbit, and the rover can send all of its data to a spacecraft nearby, and then that spacecraft relays it back. While we have some spacecraft like Juno around Jupiter, we don't have the same relay infrastructure. We haven't designed for that. Europa Clipper has a very large high gain antenna, 3-meter diameter high gain antenna. So it'll store all of the data on board. And then when it has a clear line of sight to Earth and our giant antennas, the deep space network here on Earth, it'll send the data that it's collected up to that point.
I thought the deep space network would get a mention there, to be honest.
It's a very valuable asset, actually, for all spacefaring nations.
It really is. And when you learn how it works, it's really impressive. Okay, so that's more about your experience, but let's learn a little bit about your background, Jordan.
Sure.
So, you know, what kind of missions have you worked on, and what kind of missions would you like to work on in the future?
Very good. Yeah. So by education, I'm an aerospace engineer. So aerospace is a little bit mechanical, a little bit electrical, and focuses on, just as it sounds, aircraft and spacecraft. And I started my career, I spent most of my career working for NASA, and started my career at NASA Goddard Space Flight Center, where they do a lot of telescope missions. Mm-hmm. And so my early experiences were on missions like the Hubble Space Telescope, or the Far Ultraviolet Spectroscopic Explorer, a gamma ray telescope called GLAST Fermi. And so I've worked across a variety of wavelengths, you could say, on telescope missions, infrared, visible, gamma ray, UV, far UV. I spent some time in industry, and then before I coming to the Jet Propulsion Laboratory, and I've been here about 17 years. I've worked on had the privilege of working on the Mars Science Laboratory, the Curiosity rover mission. I led the mechanical systems division of the laboratory, as well as I was deputy director for science and engineering during the period that we developed Perseverance, the rover, as well as Ingenuity, our helicopter that's flying around Mars right now. And so the missions that I've worked have spanned everything from telescopes and what we call remote sensing, where you're looking at something from far away, to rovers, which we call in situ missions, because where you're sending the robot to the location to do the science. And Clipper is interesting because it's a little of both. We have remote sensing instruments that are looking down on the surface, mm-hmm. and yet we're flying through the exosphere and tasting it with some of our mass spectrometer.
Tasting it. Analyzer,
yes. So we have we have instruments on board that will be able to interact in an in situ manner with the exosphere, the tenuous atmosphere around Europa. And so it's sort of the best of both kinds of missions that I've worked on. In terms of missions that I want to work on in the future, I mean, I am at JPL because my joy is exploration of deep space. And I've had the privilege to be able to work on those kinds of missions. One mission that has always stood out for me, because I'm also a bit of a fundamental or relativistic physics buff going back to college days, is the LISA mission. It's a laser interferometer space antenna. And it's a mission that will detect gravitational waves. So it's looking at a totally different wavelength. These waves are something that Einstein hypothesized, and LIGO determined that they're real. We've heard the chirp of black holes swallowing each other. And so a gravitational wave detector like LISA is able to effectively see black holes. And
wow.
So I worked at, that was actually the first job I had at JPL, was helping with some of the early designs of that. And as that mission takes off and starts being developed jointly between Europe and the United States, that would be a fun one to be a part of too. just because it combines my love of modern physics with telescopes and observing some in a totally different spectrum than we've been able to see before.
That sounds really interesting. I might get you back on to discuss that at a later stage.
That's a fun mission. Yeah.
Well, Jordan, as ever, you have been clear and thorough in your explanations. It's been an absolute pleasure to host you on the podcast. We have spoken previously when I've met you at Dublin Tech Summit a few years ago. So thank you so much for joining us today. Where can we learn more information about Europa Clipper and future missions?
Yeah, so if you go to nasa.gov, the website, there's... you can find out about all the different missions that are going on and research going on within NASA. And from there, you can also put a Europa Clipper in the search engine. Is a good way to do it. Or you just Google Europa Clipper, mm-hmm. and our website will come up. We also have a Twitter feed where we share a lot of our recent triumphs in developing the hardware and developing this machine, along with the science that's going on in support of this mission that we're ultimately going to do.
Brilliant. Well, thanks again, Jordan. Well, that's all we have time for now, but we'll be getting back very soon with another podcast.
Thank you for listening to the latest Irish Tech News podcast. Check back every day for the latest episode. You can follow us on Twitter @Irish_TechNews, on Facebook, facebook.com/Irish Tech News, on LinkedIn, linkedin.com/company/Irish-Tech-News, on Instagram, instagram.com/IrishTechNews.ie, and on TikTok, tiktok.com/@IrishTechNews.